A missile strike in central Ukraine results in more civilian casualties.
The Dnipropetrovsk region is the region where a lot of refugees are located at the moment, especially refugees from the Donetsk region and Kharkiv region.
Plus, Lithuania's president says that his country feels safe.
But we have to be aware of these risks because we have to deal with very dangerous neighbor. And the best proof is the situation in Ukraine.
And later in the program, aid is being provided to save lives of premature babies affected by war. Today is Wednesday, August 10th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. The governor of Ukraine's central Dnipropetrovsk region says that Russian forces struck the area overnight, resulting in civilian deaths. Russia denies targeting civilians in what it is calling a special military operation in Ukraine. And now joining us from Kyiv, Ukraine, is reporter Anna Chernikova with additional details.
The officials of the Dnipropetrovsk region reported that the attack hit the civilian area with residential buildings, and they reported dozens of rockets were used for that. Unfortunately, mostly the civilian areas were affected by this attack. We know about casualties, so at least 13 people were reported killed as of now. Dnipropetrovsk region for the moment is also under quite a severe fires from the Russian side. And I would just like to remind you that the Dnipropetrovsk region is the region where a lot of refugees are located at the moment, especially refugees from the Donetsk region and Kharkiv region, and especially those territories which are under occupation for the moment.
Now, Anna, the situation at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is still under a lot of scrutiny. And today, Wednesday, the foreign ministers at the G7 are calling on Russia to hand full control back of the plant to Ukraine. But as we spoke earlier this week, you mentioned that there would be a possibility that Moscow would try to decouple the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant from the Ukrainian power grid. And I was wondering if you could give us an update on what the latest assessment is from the Ukrainian government on that possibility. And really, what impact would that have for Ukraine should Russia succeed?
The president of Enerhoatom, which is the plant itself. So, according to Petro Kotin, Russian forces are trying at the moment to disconnect the plant from the Ukrainian territory. So, basically, what he reports is that the representatives from Russian side, from the Rosatom company, they handed over a special program for reconnecting the Zaporizhia plant to Crimea. What they're trying to do is they're trying to cut the power from this station to the Ukrainian area. This is confirmed by the actions that they have done in the past days. So we heard that on the 6th and on the 7th of August, it was an attack on the Zaporizhia plant, and a lot of connection was cut. So basically, for the moment, the plant is operating, but it's a very dangerous kind of operation because if this one connection would be cut, then generators would switch on. And we never know if these generators would have enough power to actually keep the plant ongoing. The Zaporizhia power plant is also very important for general energy system of Ukraine. And of course, it will create additional difficulties for the rest part of Ukraine in terms of power. Additional, maybe last but not least, International Atomic Energy Agency director said today that according to the information provided by the officials from the Ukrainian side, the power plant is okay for the moment. So there is no any additional danger of any damages or of its operation. And he said that radiation is normal.
Anna Chernikova reports for us from Kyiv, Ukraine. Anna, thank you very much for your reporting today.
Thank you, Steve.
A senior Ukrainian official has suggested that a series of explosions at a Russian airbase in Crimea could have been the work of partisan saboteurs. VOA has not been able to independently verify the cause of the explosions, and Ukraine has denied any responsibility for the incident deep inside the Russian-occupied territory. Reuters reporter Jason Albano is up next.
After deadly explosions rocked a Russian airbase in the annexed Crimean Peninsula on Tuesday, and questions over who or what caused the incident, Ukraine denied responsibility for the event deep inside Russian-occupied territory. Witnesses said they heard at least 12 blasts. Video obtained by Reuters showed a plume of smoke jetting into the sky. Crimea's health department, along with the Russian governor of Crimea, said at least one civilian had been killed and multiple others injured, but the cause of the blasts are still unclear. Russia's defense ministry brushed off the idea there had been an attack and claimed the blasts came from detonations of stored ammunition. A senior Ukrainian official suggested it was the work of partisan saboteurs, while another suggested Russian incompetence as a possible cause. Crimea is a holiday destination for many Russians. Moscow annexed the peninsula from Ukraine in 2014 as one of the launch pads for its invasion. Zelensky did not directly mention the blasts in his daily video address on Tuesday, but he said it was right that people were focusing on Crimea.
The presence of Russian occupiers in Crimea is a threat for all of Europe and to global stability. The Black Sea region cannot be a safe place while Crimea is occupied.
What Moscow calls a special military operation, Ukraine and its allies say, is an unprovoked imperial-style war of aggression. On Tuesday, U.S. President Joe Biden made a move of his own, formally endorsing Finland and Sweden joining NATO, the most significant expansion of the military alliance since the 1990s.
Jason Albano from Reuters News. Recently, VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze had the opportunity to sit down with Lithuanian President Gitanas Nausėda. Gungadze began the conversation by asking Nausėda what he thought Russian President Vladimir Putin's goal is after invading Ukraine.
I think Putin miscalculated the scenario of this war. The expectations were totally different. Putin expected that they will take over Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, in a few days. And this war will not bring any huge political and economic consequences on Russia. But we see that it turned to be totally different. And what is very important to mention that until the war, the reaction of European politicians and other countries too was, how to say, subdued, if I could express it like this, because nobody expected that this war and the real attempts of Russia are so terrible, and they are ambitions to conquer Ukraine. And afterwards, in the first days of the war, I saw big commitment and totally different attitude of my colleagues in European Union to act, to do something in order, first of all, to stop the war. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But then we realized that we had to do more in order to, first of all, to bring or to, yes, to bring on the table very clear consequences on Russia, and Russia must see what will be these consequences. So the first package of sanctions, second, third, fifth, and now we see that European politicians and the countries of European Union understand very well what are the threats posed by Russian authorities.
Your country was part of Soviet Union. Do your country feel safe in this environment? And do you think that NATO, your allies in NATO, would come to defend you fully. What is your readiness for the threats?
My response would be very simple. We feel safer as we were until 2004. Because in 2004, Lithuania became the member of two very important organizations, European Union and NATO. I like to say this sentence, and I repeated this sentence many times. European Union was for better life, NATO was for life. And this is still valid, and this is very important. Yes, we strongly believe in Article 5. We strongly believe in the reassurances of our partners to defend each inch of our soil. But this does not mean that we cannot put additional efforts in order to improve our security too. And this is very important to mention, that Lithuania feels safe, but we have to be aware of these risks because we have to deal with very dangerous neighbor. And the best proof is the situation in Ukraine.
Do you think the United States is doing enough in this fight? And who do you think should be a leader of this push to stop Putin in the region?
I would expect United States should be the leader. But I would say that actually United States is a leader in providing military assistance, political support, and this is very important. This is very important, but of course I would expect that the speed of the decision-making, commitment to provide more assistance, and especially speed is probably the most important issue right now. Yes, we are talking about additional military equipment, lethal weapons and other equipment, but this is very important that Ukrainians need it today, not tomorrow or after tomorrow. And each day brings a lot of casualties, as I mentioned, and people are suffering, destroyed cities and so on. And of course, we have to stop it as soon as possible. And United States' role in this is crucial.
Lithuanian President Gitanas Nausėda speaking to VOA's Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gongadze. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Residents in the southern city of Mykolaiv have emerged after a 54-hour curfew to line up for water and to pick up food aid in a region that has seen nearly daily bombardments from Russia. Charles de Ledesma from the Associated Press reports.
Resident Ludmila Stativka was forced from her village near Kherson 3 months ago and has been living as an internally placed person in nearby Mykolaiv since. She tells the AP, of course people are afraid. Russia will advance even further, but everyone's hoping that they will not reach us here and things will get better. Her friend, Natalia, adds, our village is occupied. We want to be able to go there. I want not only our village to be liberated, but the whole of Ukraine. Mykolaiv is less than 65 miles from Kherson, which came under Russian control early in the war, and Ukrainian officials have vowed to retake it. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Now, over the past few months, a small group of dedicated volunteers have also managed to evacuate more than 600 bedridden people from areas of heavy fighting in the eastern regions of Ukraine. Omalayan Ostrulayak brings us that story.
Exercice numéro 7, d'accord? Vous commencez, c'est le devoir, donc vous entendez...
Signal GPS потерян.
This French lecture is being given right on the Lysychansk-Bakhmut highway in eastern Ukraine. That's how Igor Lohivinov taught his online students last spring.
While we're evacuating, we have 4 hours, so we're getting in touch with students online and chatting.
But this French language professor is doing more than teaching online. He's also in the middle of coordinating several buses traveling across eastern Ukraine. Over the next 5 to 7 days, the buses will help evacuate over 160 bedridden people from the most dangerous parts of eastern Ukraine. The success of evacuation is a miracle of logistics. The team has a hotline so evacuees can call, leave their address and get added to the evacuee list. But for some, it's too late.
When we arrived at the evacuation, we were a little late. Some of the houses were just not there anymore. What happened to the people who lived there? We don't know. We arrived at the address we had and saw a shell crater.
With the help of dozens of volunteers, the bedridden people are evacuated from small towns and then brought to a central embarkation point. They are then sent by bus and train to Lviv, an area relatively safe from Russian shelling. Often some of the evacuation routes are no longer accessible, and Lohvinov must find new ones. Dmytro Maksimovich met Lohvinov after he relocated to Chernivtsi at the beginning of the war. Maksimovich was looking for help evacuating his mother from the Kyiv region. The two men soon became a team.
A woman called and asked, "Can you take a bedridden person?" There were so many such calls, and we always refused. But when the woman said this was the 10th refusal she'd heard, Ihor suggested we try and take these people out of there. Imagine what it's like to bathe a bedridden person in the basement of a house. It's almost impossible.
Maksimovich is also looking for shelter for each evacuee. For some, he rents accommodations, others get sent abroad. Now that the war has entered its 6 months, Maksimovich plans to open his own shelter.
We will start with one shelter in the Kyiv region. We're looking for a hospital wing that is no longer in use. And if they have water, heat, and electricity there, we'll find funds to purchase beds, mattresses, and bed linens.
The walk never stops. Already Lohvinov is preparing for a new round of evacuations. He has 25 confirmed addresses spread across 3,000 kilometers. Amaliano Shudlyak for VOA News, Chernivtsi, Ukraine.
A harsh blow to Russian President Vladimir Putin, as the United States has now completed its final step in ratifying NATO's expansion on Tuesday to include Sweden and Finland. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports on the most significant expansion of the military alliance in more than two decades, which now just needs 7 more countries for completion.
U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday officially endorsing Finland's and Sweden's accession to NATO, a direct response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
And in a moment when Putin's Russia has shattered peace and security in Europe, when autocrats are challenging the very foundations of a rule-based order, the strength of the transatlantic alliance and America's commitment to NATO is more important than it's ever been.
The Finns and Swedes will add small but advanced militaries to the alliance. And Finland's accession will expand NATO's border with Russia by more than 1,300 kilometers, which Foundation for Defense of Democracy's Bradley Bowman says will directly affect Vladimir Putin's calculus.
If you're a Russian military planner or you're Vladimir Putin, you're contemplating aggression against NATO, right? And you're planning to do it maybe in the Black Sea region or somewhere else or even in the Baltics. You have to be wondering what could be coming at you from Finland if you do that.
Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin visited American troops in the Baltic nation of Latvia a day after the U.S. announced a new $1 billion military aid package for Ukraine, the largest drawdown of U.S. military stockpiles for Kyiv to date. Russia has caused heavy casualties for Ukrainian forces, but the Pentagon says Ukraine continues to effectively use weapons provided by the West, with Russia losing 3,000 to 4,000 armored vehicles in Ukraine and even more troops. Colin Call is the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy.
There's a lot of fog in war, but, you know, I think it's safe to suggest that the Russians have probably taken 70 or 80,000 casualties in less than 6 months.
More graves in Bucha this week as citizens buried unidentified victims months after Russia's occupation. Smoke bellowed from a Russian base in Crimea Tuesday morning after a loud explosion. Crimea's governor said one person was killed in the blast. A senior Ukrainian military official says Ukraine was behind the attack, as Russia claims the explosion was from its own detonation of ammunition on the base. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
A U.S. State Department official also said on Tuesday that the United States will provide $89 million to help Ukraine clear Russian landmines, improvised explosive devices, as well as booby traps. The $89 million U.S. aid package will go to train teams of 2 to 12 people to help with mine-clearing operations on land only, not the sea, as well as to provide necessary equipment, including protective gear, metal detectors, earth movers, and other items. The funding will support approximately 100 teams to take on what the officials described as a massive amount of mines and other explosive devices, littering an estimated 160,000 square kilometers of Ukrainian land. The State Department officials said that the need for demining is urgent. Global Health Agency, Unitaid, says a device it has provided for use in hospitals in war-torn Ukraine is saving lives of many premature babies who would otherwise die. Lisa Schlein has those details.
It is difficult to get an accurate count of the number of prematurely born babies who have died since Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th. But Unitaid says some hospitals in which its device is being used report premature deaths are more than three times higher now than they were before the war broke out. It says premature deaths have risen from 12% to 40% today, making its life-saving device more important now than ever. Unitaid says many hospitals have been damaged or destroyed and supply chains broken, putting thousands of newborns at high risk of disability or death from lack of oxygen and other essential treatment. Unitaid spokesman Hervé Verhoesel says Unitaid, through its partner Vayu Global Health, has provided 220 bubble nasal devices and 125 oxygen blender systems. This system, he says, will supply premature babies at risk with the breathing support and the oxygen they need to survive. He says the bubble CPAP device, as it is called, is a non-invasive way of ventilating newborns who are struggling to breathe. He notes the oxygen blenders give babies the pure oxygen they need to prevent eye, lung, and brain damage.
We see that this device is very cheap, less than $500 at the end of the day for the device itself to produce the device. I don't speak about the research and development costs that we have put in this, obviously, meaning that it's easy to use, working for 3 years, without electricity, very cheap, efficient, simple to use device.
The bubble nasal devices are available in 25 facilities across Ukraine, of which 17 are perinatal centers. World Health Organization spokeswoman Margaret Harris says it is crucial to have a portable device which can function offline in a war setting.
And one of the critical things is having something like this that can function when you've got no electricity, for instance, because as you know, we've verified 434 attacks on hospitals, and every time there's an attack, one of the things that happens is the electricity doesn't work.
The device was granted emergency use authorization by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to help in the fight against COVID-19. Unitaid says the devices can be used worldwide, but are particularly well-suited in humanitarian crises or in poorer countries. The system, which has proven to be effective in saving the lives of premature babies, is currently being used in several African countries, as well as Belgium and the United States. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage on Ukraine, as well as news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.